Hello, everyone, and thank you for listening to our Interviews with Wolfner Library Volunteers series. My name is Lisa Hellman, Youth Services Librarian for Wolfner Talking Book and Braille Library. Joining me today is Teresa Sullivan, one of Wolfner Library's narrators. Teresa has been volunteering for Wolfner Library for over 10 years. She recently finished Dry by Neil and Jared Schusterman, a 2020-2021 Gateway Reader Award nominee. So Teresa, why did you want to start volunteering in general?
Well, I had just retired from teaching, and my children were now grown. So it was time for me to give back to society. And so I was looking for something that would be of a real benefit that I felt that I was qualified to do.
How did you find out about Wolfner Library's volunteer program, and why did you choose Wolfner Library?
Well, there were a couple of reasons. The first one, I was a speech therapist in the public school, so I worked very intimately with the students who were in my program. And one of the students that I had was a little girl who had a tremendous visual impairment. In fact, she had one quadrant of vision. And because of the lack of vision, there were certain areas in her language that she was just missing because she couldn't see well. So I got very closely acquainted with our Jefferson City teacher for the visually impaired, and even went with her to St. Louis for conferences on the visually impaired, which I found absolutely fascinating. It was a whole other society, something that I had not dealt with. I had actually dealt much more with the deaf community than with the visually impaired. Secondly, as one of the things that I started doing once I retired, was to start back to amateur theatrics. And some of the people who were actors also volunteered at the Wolfner Library. And it just seemed like a perfect fit for me. So that's why I chose Wolfner.
So you mentioned going into theatrics. Was that one of your main reasons for wanting to volunteer as a narrator?
Actually, long before that, as a bachelor's degree back in 1961, I got that degree. I majored in speech and theater and also English. So that was a first love of mine. Even in high school, I went out for speech contests. I took part in plays. And then when I did my master's degree immediately after the bachelor's degree, I was only allowed to choose 6 hours. And I chose those 6 hours in oral interpretation of literature, which is exactly what being a narrator is all about. So that emphasized things like, how do you go about preparing the material? And how do you get the close interpretation of what the author wishes for the listener to pick up? So this has been a love of mine for forever. Once I had 3 children, I decided I need to move in something that also involved their schedules. So I transferred into speech therapy so that I could work in the elementary schools. So my whole area has been speech. So it was no surprise that I wanted to be a narrator.
So narrators have to go through an audition process. What do you remember of your audition, and were you nervous?
First of all, I had so much self-confidence about my ability in the speech area. I really thought that all they would have to do is listen to me talk, and they would say, oh, well, of course, we want you to record for us. Boy, was I wrong. I was given an opportunity to choose from several different readings and was told that I would need to be recorded and that recording would be sent to someplace in Washington, D.C., and they would decide whether or not I could be a narrator. I was simply stunned. So I prepared And I went back in the next week, and this was Deborah Straub, who was in charge of volunteers then. And I was recorded, and I thought, well, I should hear from them in a week, and I'll be in making books. And I didn't hear. It was going on 6 weeks, and I thought, this is ridiculous. So I went in, and I said, what is going on? I haven't heard anything. And Deborah said, well, we just have received word that you are acceptable. And then she handed me this huge folder of how to go about preparing a reading. And I was simply stunned of how complicated it was going to be. So yes, I was completely surprised with the audition process.
So you read youth and adult books. Do you prefer to read one over the other?
Well, there's a difference between the two. The children's are the youth books. And when I say youth books, and the books that I choose, if I'm given a choice, are the teen books. When you're looking at a teenager, a 13-year-old, their intelligence is as strong as it will probably be for the rest of their life. They don't have the wisdom and they don't have the experience, but the plots and the things that they talk about can be extremely adult. So in that case, I don't feel that I'm being dumbed down by reading the youth books. Also, the youth books are selected by librarians throughout the United States, books that they feel that students will gain a benefit from. Now, some of the books, the teen books that I've read, one is Croak, which was about teens given special powers to fly to newly dead persons whose souls needed to be released from their bodies. Counting Time, I did a couple years ago, which was about a teen whose younger brother had a deadly form of cancer, and the family had to leave their spacious home in California to live in a New York apartment so he could get the best possible treatment. Last year, I read Deep, another teen book, which involved two very contrasted girls' lives. One had been kidnapped and the other was living alone and manning a boat, and they wound up saving each other. So the teen books, because the topics that they can deal with can be so wide, they can be very dystopian, they can be very fanciful, but the adult books that I read, because we are in Missouri, those books must be about Missouri, are written by Missouri authors. So that is much more limiting than what the teen books are.
So you've been reading books for us for, like I mentioned, over 10 years. So could you tell us a bit about the recording process from your perspective and how you prepare before recording a book?
Well, the preparation for recording begins immediately after I have taken a book home. I read the entire book in that first week. I might mark page breaks at the end, but it's mainly about getting an idea of the contents and the kind of the attitude or the thrust or the philosophy of the book. Next, I prepare the sessions weekly, usually preparing about 30 to 40 pages, what I think we will get recorded in the 2 hours. I have to check the pronunciation of any word I'm unfamiliar with. I have to mark where breaks in sentences occur if I'm going to have the correct meaning, which I will present. I have to mark any unusual inflection that might be needed. I also read the pages aloud, since that's where I find where I might have trouble with phrasing or pronunciation. I make sure I know what the author is trying to convey. The day of recording, I work to clear my voice. I put salt on my tongue to create something like an ocean breeze, which will loosen phlegm I also gargle with salt water. I may take a cough drop before I go in, or I will take an allergy pill, which I do right now because we are dealing with so much ragweed. I also bring lemon juice and a bottle of water with me. By the time I have actually gone in and read the book, or read the book to be recorded, I have read that 3 to 4 times. I'm very familiar with the contents. Generally, as a part of preparation, and this will sound strange, but it was part of, I'm retired now, I have time for this. One of the things that I have found in, of course, dealing with adults in speech therapy, as one of the ways to maintain your mental ability, you should learn a foreign language, or you should do a musical instrument. Well, I already played the piano. So what I decided to do was to move into much more difficult music. So now every morning I am playing Bach's Inventions, or a part of his Well-Tempered Clavier, or one of Mozart's, I have an album of 19 of his sonatas. And when you are watching music, both the treble and the bass clef, you have to stretch your visual field. Bach is so difficult because you're playing one melody in the left hand and a different melody in the right hand. You've got key changes. You've got timing changes. It's a wonderful visual exercise. So that's another something that I do as far as, and I consider this as a part of my preparation for reading.
So after recording the book, there are some other parts after the actual recording, like the editing process. Could you go a little bit further into what happens after you finished recording the book?
We have to wait until a reviewer has, now she or he also has a copy of the book, and they have a copy of the recording. And so they are checking to make sure that I have been accurate on reading the book. All of the words that I've said are what are actually in the book. And it's always the kinds of errors I make is would for could, or for the. It's some little small mistake. Well, if we're going to be true to the author, those have to be corrected. I don't enjoy doing that. But what I especially don't enjoy when there is some kind of a noise that the reviewer has heard. And so that even my monitor can't hear the noise. It depends on what soundproof booth the reviewer is in. And I will need to go back and redo several sentences because they heard some random noise. And we don't want random noises or anything that might interfere in the listener. So that is probably my least enjoyable part of it. If I've made the error, I don't have any problem at all at having to go back. But if it's a machine glitch of some sort, and we have a whole bunch of those, that's a little irritating. Now, I have some wonderful monitors. The first one I had, Paul Otto, for about 5 years. And right now I've got Lauren Cameron. And those people are so good at this. They will pick up an error that I've made immediately. And then we go back and we correct it right there. So what we want is that the reviewer has to find so few of these things. But that's probably my least enjoyable part of the recording process.
So we now know your least favorite part of the recording process. What is your favorite?
My favorite part, of course, is the recording. You know, I love working with a monitor. Usually you develop a relationship with this person. You come to trust them implicitly. If they have heard a mistake, they truly have heard a mistake. Occasionally, I will pick up my own mistakes and will go back and listen. But developing that relationship with the person monitoring you, I mean, they are so vital. And just a trusting faith that they are not in there to mess you up. They really, if they say they think they've heard an error, they're right. They've heard an error. What Lauren and I will get stuck on, just because you can read a word and you know what the word means, doesn't mean that you've ever spoken the word. And Lauren will say, you know, she'll stop and she'll say, I think that's pronounced in such and such a way. And I'll say, no, I think it's pronounced the way I'm saying it. And we have a pronunciation information on the computer. And what's happened so often is that there are two pronunciations for a particular word that we simply don't use in conversation. I have chosen one. She has heard the other one. So then it's six of one, half dozen of the other. So that's what seems to happen repeatedly.
You recently finished Dry by Neil and Jared Schusterman, a 2020-2021 Gateway Reader Award nominee. Why did you get to read that book, and what did you like or not like about it?
Well, this book I got to choose last February. I was told I could choose one of several teen books, and when I saw Dry's authors had already won awards, and I read a brief paragraph on the back of the book that it regarded environmental issues, I knew I wanted to record it. Climate change and the environment are major concerns of mine. The authors were incredibly informed about what would happen if a water source was suddenly cut off from a geographic area. You must remember that this was fiction. This was Southern California, and Nevada and Arizona decided they could no longer let water from the Colorado River go into California. They needed the water. There was no warning given, just no water was now available. At the end of the book, 200,000, in a week, 200,000 people had died of dehydration. In just this one week. I think that adults would also gain a lot from listening to this book, because to realize how little time it takes for a person to go from absolutely fine to death by dehydration was absolutely fascinating. And the desperation that people are in, people went into areas that they were in a group waiting for a helicopter to bring water into that area. And of course, the water wasn't available. You know, people would trade anything for some water. It was so realistic. And to me, in the realm of possibility. And so I thought it was just marvelous. I hope more than children listen to this book.
Besides Dry, you have read 55 other books since you started as a volunteer narrator. Do you have a favorite book you have recorded? And if so, why is it your favorite?
Well, actually, right now, I've gone back. Dry is my favorite. The two books prior to that that were my favorites were both biographical. One was called Mark and Livy, which was about Mark Twain and Olivia Langdon and their marriage. I don't know if you watched the Ken Burns Mark Twain presentation on PBS, but so much of what was in Mark and Livy was also in the Mark Twain presentation by Burns. I learned so much more about the kind of person who Mark Twain was. The second book that I really enjoyed, and this also was biographical, was about the 1904 World's Fair, and the title of the book was indescribably grand. And in it, three different people had written letters to others about their experience with the 1904 World's Fair. The primary person was a lawyer, and he talked a lot about setting up the fair and the financial involvement of the fair. But the one I found most interesting was a young man who was a carpenter, and he earned $6 a day. Remember, this was back in 1904, and it would cost him an entire day's pay by the time he took public transportation and went into St. Louis, paid his entry fee into the 1904 World's Fair, and then went into some of the presentations which you had to pay for. It was just so exciting to follow him and what he was doing. You know, there simply was no such thing as a bank of electric lights, which is what he walked into. He couldn't believe what he was looking at. He spent a lot of time in the Thomas Edison building, and that was fascinating to follow him. And even though he was giving up money that he needed for eating, he would do it to go to the World's Fair. He also spent money to take his sister to the World's Fair. And she was the third person who wrote about her experience at the World's Fair. So those two books, I gained more personal information than any other, and especially enjoyed them.
We've gone over some of your favorite books. Is there a book that has been more challenging than others? And if so, how was it more challenging?
One of the books that I read recently, and this was written by a man in St. Louis, and the name of the book was The Home Front in Civil War, Missouri. Now, considering what happened in Missouri during the Civil War, a lot of the books that deal with Missouri are about Missouri during the Civil War. And this was another of those books. But in that book, there was a letter, which I'm assuming he put the actual letter in the book, by a barely educated black man. He was making a plea to the authorities for his daughter. He wanted his daughter back. So it was written as this ex-slave had written. So he had atrocious grammar. The spelling was awful, and I had to be true to what he had written, yet what he was saying made absolute sense, and he was justified in what he was saying. So I had to have all the errors in reading this letter and yet emphasize the meaning of what he had written. And I think I read that letter at least 20 times aloud to be sure that I was saying what this poor man was trying to get across. So that was probably one of the most difficult things that I have ever recorded. I was very pleased that when we received our, the review had been done on that particular letter, the reviewers did not have any corrections that I had to make. But it's the business of being true to what the author has written was what struck me so about that particular letter, and that was what was so important.
Knowing what your favorite books are, and of course some of the most challenging, what would be your dream book that you would love to narrate and why? Not necessarily a specific title, just what topic or even age group. What would be your ideal book that you would like to narrate?
Well, I really think I've just done that. I just finished dry. I started that in February, and then we got hit with the pandemic. So I sat here knowing that dry was not being recorded for all of that time. I couldn't believe it when we finally were able to go back with all kinds of precautions. And I was eager to get back and to get this book back. I thought the message in it was so important, the reality of what we could be doing to our environment, the kind of damage that we're doing, what could happen when a drastic situation happens. I think of the people down in Louisiana who are right now having extreme heat situations, no electricity, their home has been trashed, they have a gross amount of water sitting around, so the humidity must be atrocious. I can't imagine what they're going through. So I think that books which are a warning, are a reality, are so important that those are my dream books.
When you aren't recording a book for Wolfner Library, what book or books do you read in your spare time?
Well, I read all the time. You know, this is one of my reasons that I am more than happy. I feel privileged to be able to record for people who can't read. My main reading is, number one, digital newspapers. I also read a lot of biography, having just finished Becoming Dr. Seuss about Theodore Dreiser, and I read nonfiction. Recently, I have read The Lion in Your Living Room, which is about domestic cats and the incredible damage that they have done to so many species. I've also am in the process of reading Hitler's Children. I am reading right now Birdology, which is a fascinating book about birds and their close tie to dinosaurs. This author is actually saying the dinosaurs didn't disappear, they continued to evolve, and they have evolved into birds. And it's a fascinating theory. I recently read The Golden State, and I am reading I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, and this is for my book club for learning in retirement. And I will soon be reading 1984 with the book club. So it's a huge variety. I am reading constantly.
The last thing that I want to bring up is the fact that you are the primary narrator for Charlotte Hubbard's series, Seasons of the Heart. What is it like recording a series compared to a novel, and how do you feel about being the voice of a series?
I'm just surprised that it has evolved into this. The first time I read a Charlotte Hubbard book, it was kind of like my first time reading a Harlequin romance. Oh, well, that's interesting. And then the second one, it was like, well, I thought I just read this. But there is such a tight similarity between one of Charlotte Hubbard's books and the next one. I find that there's a lot of emphasis on men and women interrelationships, on babies, and on food. However, these topics do interest a lot of people, and I have to keep in mind that I am recording for others. It's what they enjoy that I should keep in mind. So the fact that it's a series, I recognize a character from a previous book, and that's a real advantage. I know where she's coming from and why this person has been reintroduced. I have learned a lot about the Amish faith and a lot of their words, which are slightly different, and their speech patterns, which are slightly different from mainstream United States. For instance, the word good is gut, dad is dad, mom is ma'am. And these are things that are like second nature to me at this point. So, you know, I'm very flattered that people are enjoying these books so much. I have had as many as 50 people waiting for a book to be finished. And in fact, just this past week, the new directress of volunteers asked me if I would be willing to start another series by Mrs. Hubbard. And I said, of course I would, if that's what people are wanting. Apparently I'm getting some very direct requests that I go back to some of Hubbard's books. I'm there for the people who need these books.
Well, thank you so much, Teresa, for doing this for us, the narrating as well as agreeing to this interview. And of course, thank you to all our listeners for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. If you are interested in Wolfner Library providing other podcasts like this, you can contact us at wolfner@sos.mo.gov or call us at 573-751-8720. Thanks again to Teresa and everyone listening. Have a great day or night.